the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of February 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson. Dan Zwicker is out of the office today. In agricultural news, MF Global customers have failed in their bid to recoup 100% of their segregated account funds ahead of other creditors. The CME Group is reporting profits of less than had been expected, and the Labor Department has agreed to modify rules pertaining to child labor on the farm. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And don't forget, at the end of our program, meteorologist Peter Levitt will be here to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast, and that it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day mixed. The contracts for the March in the wheat at 662 and three quarters for soft bread, down 11 and a half cents. May at 678, down 9 and a half. July at 691 and three quarters, 5 and a half lower. And September futures, $7.08, down 3 for the soft red winter wheat in Chicago. In Kansas City, the hard red finished at $7.33 and a half, a settlement price there, down 4 and three quarters. March corn futures, 643 up 1. May at 649 and a half, half a penny and a quarter higher. July at 653 and a half, up 1 and three quarters. And September corn futures, $6 a penny and a half, up 3 and a quarter cents as well. December futures at 579, up 2 and a quarter. March contract in the bean pit, $12.17, up 1 and three quarters. May at 1225 and a half, up a penny and a quarter. July at 1235, 2 and a quarter higher. And the August beans, 1232 and three quarters, up 12 and a quarter cents. September, 1227 and a half, up 4. November beans at 1223 and three quarters, 5 and a half cents higher. Bean meal futures at 323.40 for the March, up 110. March bean oil at 51.19, a penny higher on the day. Live cattle futures finished the April contract at 128.90. That's down 32 and a half cents. June at 128.10, 42 and a half cents lower. March feeder cattle at 155.37 and a half, 47 and a half cents higher. And the April futures up 30 cents, 100 pounds, at 157.92 and a half. Lean hogs in the April contract, $89.75, up, rather down 60. It was the May contract that was higher, up 15, 97.55, the settlement price there. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $96.52 a barrel, down $1.08. Ethanol at 2.14 and 6 tenths of a cent, down 2 and 3 tenths. Natural gas at 2.56 and 3 tenths. That's 18 and a tenth of a cent higher for the day. The heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.05 and 6 tenths of a cent, a penny lower, rather a penny and a tenth higher. And the gold futures at $1,756 and 8 tenths of a cent, up $9.70. The dollar at 78.99. That's up 0.07. The CRB index up 0.63 at 310.90. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. It says for Urbana-Champaign, yet this evening, partly cloudy skies, a low of 31 degrees, a light east to northeast wind, Friday increasing cloudiness, a high of 52, Friday night occasional rain, a low of 38, Saturday occasional rain, a high of 45. It'll be breezy Saturday with an east wind at 14 to 20 mile an hour, gusting all the way to 25. The chance of precipitation is 80% on Saturday during the day, 80% also Friday evening, by the way. Saturday night, a 40% chance of rain, cloudy at a low of 36. Sunday, mostly cloudy at a high of 45 degrees. Sunday night, mostly cloudy at a low of 30. On Monday, mostly sunny skies, a high of 42. Monday night, partly cloudy and 27. Tuesday, sunny skies, a high of 40. Tuesday night, cloudy and 25. And by the time we get to Wednesday, we should see mostly sunny skies, a high of 37 degrees. We'll talk more about the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. And Pete Levitt joins us to take a look at what's been happening here and around the globe in the growing regions.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural futures markets. Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group, she's in Champaign, Illinois, now joins us to take a look at what's been happening in the world of the agricultural markets up in Chicago. Thanks, Jackie, for filling in for Dan Zwicker this afternoon. We do appreciate that.
Thank you, Ted.
Well, let's start with the corn pit for the afternoon. What did you think of the action today?
Well, it was not exactly. I mean, it was encouraging that we were able to start out lower and come back. Some of that, of course, was supported by the fact that after exports came out, we actually had a purchase come in from Japan. And Japan has been the one that's been lagging since the tsunami, not buying nearly as much. So that supported it. Taiwan came out and said they're looking for corn. And I think that we also took some great benefits from spreading that went on between wheat and corn, or I should say spread unwinding today. You saw beans come back up after they started lower, and I do believe that that's where all the action came from.
When you take a look at the fundamentals across the planet, is there anything that hits you in particular that you want to keep an eye on as we make our way towards the end of the marketing year, which will happen about the time we get to fall?
Well, most definitely, Todd. In fact, I think that it's something that you don't hear very many people talking about, but at this point in time, when you look at world days of supply left on corn and basically the stocks-to-use ratio, we are at unprecedented levels since 1981, the lowest we've seen. On last report and from the USDA, we came in at 14.8% with only 53.7 days left. You know, and that is way too low when you think of how many people have to eat on this planet. The more concerning part, though, is that we know since the last report we've seen reductions in the corn crop both in Argentina and Brazil. And yesterday, AgriConsult came out and actually dropped it to 18.8. USDA is actually 26 million metric tons right now. And they dropped the Brazilian crop from 61 down to 58.5. And so this could be an extremely serious situation if we actually saw them come in on the USDA report coming out next week Friday and reduced it by 6 million out of a potential 10.7 million bushel drop. They're going to have to do something. They're either going to have to lower usage, which isn't going to be easy to do, but if they don't change usage, it'll drop us to 48.85 days. That is just an unacceptable number.
And by comparison, go back and tell me what it usually looks like and when the last time we were this low. I know you mentioned that up front.
Well, you know, when you look at it, this situation, a good carryout number has got to be somewhere, you know, in that 70 to 80 day, and we haven't been there actually since about 2002. Back in 2004, we hit about 70 days and then dropped all the way down below the 60-day level, but never as low as we've been. And then back in 2008, we had crawled back up to the 70. And so this is just to give you a comparison, back in 85, we actually had about 165 days worth of corn in the world. And so this is very, very concerning.
Well, we know 85 wasn't particularly good, so maybe 165 days is an awful lot of grain.
Well, I'll give you 1997. We were at 120
there
in
you
97.
Go. All right, that may be a better comparison.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. So all in all, though, producers are looking at cash bids that are awfully good and have been above the futures market for a couple, 3 or 4 weeks now.
Yeah.
But have been strong since fall, and do you expect that will continue given what you're seeing on the global marketplace, at least for old crop, and then how do you deal with new crop given these conditions?
Well, when you look at the old crop, Todd, when we saw the quarterly grain stocks that came in last month, farmers were holding 64% of the corn crop, and so that tells you that, you know, the commercial is not holding the majority of the corn, and therefore it's not to be unexpected to see these good basis levels. With the backing up of that, you know, looking here at the world supply numbers, again, it backs up good basis levels. This doesn't mean you shouldn't be rewarding the move up that we've had, but I think as a good rule of thumb, and this goes across corn, beans, and wheat right now, we're above the 100-day moving average on all of them. If we fall below the 100-day moving average or they start to see basis weaken at all, then I think you make some sales. And, you know, it's a situation where technically we have a very strong market along with a good fundamental market. On the new side, new crop, I think what you've got to do is you sit back and rather than necessarily sell in the cash market, I think you go out and you do some put strategies. There's an awful lot of questions out there. And, you know, you may ask me, why would you even do put strategies when you look at these world numbers? Well, we have to recognize last year we had 96 million acres of potential when it comes to the corn market and corn plantings. If we get a, you know, if the weather stays the way it is, people are going to get on this land and they're going to plant corn, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that again. And if that's the case, we're not going to hold that 579, 580 area or $6 area. So I think it's just important that you have some type of floor in place.
We appreciate you taking the time with us, Jackie. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
Hey, you too. Jackie Fakes is with Stuart Peterson. She's in Champaign, Illinois. Join us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Hey, have you dialed in just yet to this number at 217-333-7300 to pick up your tickets for our all-day Ag Outlook meeting? Those have been on sale for about 4 or 5 days now, and we sell about 350 of those. There are just 69 left, and if you'd like to come, you might want to pick one of those up and assure your spot for the all-day Ag Outlook. It is the 6th day of March. That's the first Tuesday of the month over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. Most of our analysts will be on board for that one, along with a few special guests, including Chris Hurt from Purdue, Joe Vaklovic from Straits Financial, and Steve Platt from Archer Financial Services. It's all about the all-day Ag Outlook. It's a great meeting. You can call in for your tickets now at 217-333-7300. Dave Dickey, our Director of Agricultural Programming for the station in Illinois Public Media, puts that program together. Our thanks to him for doing that. Speaking of Dave, he's here right now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a federal bankruptcy judge yesterday rejected a bid by commodities customers of MF Global for special priority status over other creditors in the Chapter 11 case of its parent company, MF Global Holdings Limited. That priority status would have entitled the account holders to receive payment from the Chapter 11 estates of 100% of their segregated account funds on a first priority basis ahead of all other creditors of the Chapter 11 debtors. The bankruptcy judge also denied a request to conduct a new probe into MF Global's collapse. MF Global Holdings Limited filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection on October 31st. CME Group today posted a lower operating profit that missed expectations, though net results were boosted sharply by tax benefits from a change in Illinois law last year. The company posted a profit of $745.9 million, or $11.25 a share, compared with a year earlier profit of $192.6 million, or $2.93 per share. CME results included a $528 million benefit from an adjustment to the value of deferred tax liabilities. CME won a tax break from Illinois legislators late last year that cuts its tax bill by more than $70 million annually. The tax break allows CME to count less than a third of its trading income as taxable under state law versus 100% before the new law. The Environmental Protection Agency yesterday missed a deadline to release federal guidelines on the dangers of excess dioxin chemicals in the food supply and environment. The EPA was scheduled to release standards in January that would, for the first time, set a maximum human exposure level for dioxins. The delay comes after criticism by food and chemical industries that have argued the EPA is using flawed science and will scare Americans about the food they eat. An EPA spokeswoman says the agency is working on the report as quickly as possible, but would not comment on when it might be released. Under pressure from farm groups, the Labor Department has agreed to modify a plan that's intended to keep children away from some of the most dangerous farm jobs. The proposal will now include broader exemptions for children whose parents are part owners or operators of farms or have a substantial interest in a farm partnership or corporation. Farm groups had complained that the initial rules proposed last year would upset traditions where children often worked alongside their parents and relatives to learn how a farm operates. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Up next, Lisa Braltz is here with another edition of In My Backyard. This week, she discovers how the farm is changing.
Farming has stereotypes, like all farmers ride tractors, or all farmers live in the country and are isolated from what goes on in the real world, or all farmers are men. In much of the world, women are the primary food producers. In poor countries, 70 to 90% of all food is produced by women. In the United States, 1 million women identify as farmers. That's 30% of the total number of farmers, and that number is growing every year. While tending small organic operations is certainly not the domain solely of women who farm, it seems that a lot of women getting into farming choose that method, like Lisa Haynes. The first time I saw Lisa was at a farmer's market, only she wasn't a farmer at the time. She was working for another organic farmer for some extra cash while she was in school, studying to be a nuclear engineer. She now owns and operates Tominu's Farm in Mahomet, Illinois, and sells what she grows at farmers markets through her community-supported agriculture shares and a little to retail and wholesale customers. What began as a desire to homestead and be more self-sufficient on 7 acres is now an almost 40-acre ode to diversity on the farm.
We do a lot of small amounts of livestock. We do broiler chickens and heritage turkeys. We do goats and goat milk. And I guess we usually do pastured veal. We've got lamb. We do a wide range of grain crops. We've got, you know, your corn and soybeans, tofu, soybeans, wheat, barley, oats, peas. All of our ground right now is either certified organic or going into transition.
It's Lisa's farm, but Tominu's is a family operation. Her husband, who works off the farm, and teenage son, who goes to high school, contribute by fixing machinery, working with livestock, and other on-farm tasks.
When Maxwell, our youngest, was really young, he was homeschooled, so the farming fit in really well because there are so many learning opportunities on the farm. I think that he's really learned the value of hard work. He knows how to work really hard. It's kind of interesting to me. I'm always surprised at the knowledge he has about the farm. He'll just, you know, we had a calf that was a little sick a few weeks ago, and he said, oh, you need to get electrolytes for that. I mean, he knows little things like a calf scouring. You got to go get electrolyte for it.
She also employs a small staff. Working with her staff is almost like parenting, she says, although her staff wants to be there working maybe a little more than Maxwell does. She disabuses her potential workers of any romanticized notions about farming.
You know, I tell people during their job interviews that this is brutal, they're going to hate it, they're going to be sore, it's not fun, it's not easy. It's satisfying, but there's very little that's super great about it. I mean, it's all hard. You feel good by the end of the year, everybody's really strong, can do tons of stuff, and we've grown a lot of food for a lot of people, but it is really hard. I mean, my goal with most of the people who come and work here is that they will eventually, you know, kind of graduate and go get their own farm and move on with it. It's definitely, I want this to be a learning experience and not just going out and, you know, hoeing a row of peas. I want them to understand everything along the entire process as much as they can and use that to go start their own farm somewhere.
It's not all pests or weeds or drainage problems, all issues that come up on the farm every day that get dealt with. It's not all laying awake in the dark, second-guessing a decision made during the day. In addition to teaching the occasional class at Parkland College, being involved with the Farm Bureau, and writing grants that permit her to do studies on her farm, Lisa has other outside interests.
We try to do a lot outside the farm. It's hard because it does take up a lot of time, but we used to race motorcycles a lot. My husband's getting back into it. I'm thinking about getting back into it, but I had an injury several years back, so I'm a little nervous about wrecking my farm season. I did just run the Illinois Marathon. People kind of asked why I would be running because I work so hard, and I say, I don't know. You know, farm work's not that aerobic. I need to do it.
But eventually, everything comes back to the farm.
I have sort of fleeting ideas like, oh, how cool would it be to grow tilapia? But it's not going to happen. I think I'm doing what I want, really. I just want to do it better. And that's a consistent goal, is to get better at it, make better decisions.
This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
Hey, if you want to hear Lisa Braltz In My Backyard segments, you can always do that again on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop.
This is the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the cash grain market. On the phone line with us, Matt Bennett. He's at TGM in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Did you have a good meeting last night?
Had a great meeting. We had probably 150-plus to listen to Dave Hightower talk to us a little bit about what he saw playing out in the futures market here in the next few months, and had a lot of good ideas and opinions, and it was a pretty good, interesting evening for everyone that was there.
What'd you learn?
Oh, I learned a whole lot. When Dave is talking, you better be paying attention is one thing that I think a lot of guys learned. But he feels like we'll have some easing into the early spring time frame, and then he sees, you know, a pretty robust demand basically taking over a somewhat burdensome supply situation. You know, even if we have large acreage, he thinks that we're going to need really, really good summer weather. We're going to have very strong prices. Now, he's not talking $8. He did quantify it, but he does think that, you know, the idea of $5 and $6 corn is not something that's going to go away anytime soon.
So $5 and $6 corn, but no 7s, no 8s, maybe 7s, I suppose.
I know he said that he really doesn't think we'll get to 8, but, you know, he definitely feels like we've got some things to be excited about still.
What's kind of movement in your area? It's been really good cash basis. Have farmers been taking advantage?
Oh, no kidding. These farmers have been eating it up. It's been interesting to watch how this thing's gone. But, you know, I think there's a lot of corn disappearing off the farm. There's not going to be a whole lot of corn left on the farm here before too long. Guys, even if they aren't selling it, you know, they're getting it out of there anyway. And we've had a lot of movement across the scales here in ADM. They've been buying some corn off of us. We're shipping some up to Decatur, and then we're shipping some to the river and some to some ethanol facilities still. So there's a lot of movement right now.
Have you gotten to the point where you're thinking, hey, wait a second, maybe I should hang on until May, late May or June to move the rest of it?
Oh, I think some guys have gotten to that point. But as far as I'm concerned, this is still an excellent price, and it's very profitable. And I think a guy probably ought to be looking at gambling bushels only, in my opinion only.
Okay. Anything else to add before we get your bids for the day?
Oh, no, just be aware that this year might be not near as bad as what everyone thinks it could be, you know, and doesn't hurt to do a little bit of planning ahead of time, do a little risk management.
All right, and your bids are?
649 on cash corn and 549 on fall, and then 1201 on cash beans and 1194 for fall beans.
Hey, Matt, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Bennett is with TGM. He's in Windsor, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. We'll say goodbye to some of our radio stations now. For the rest of you, stick around. I'll be back in a couple of minutes with the agricultural weather forecast.
Support for Stock and Commodity Reports on Illinois Public Media comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, now hosting risk management seminars. A complete list of seminars is at sfarmmarketing.com.
It's Brewhog Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1659, Jan van Riebeck, the first governor of the Cape of Good Hope in South Africa, made the first wine from grapes grown at the Cape. He planted the vineyard in 1655. In 1795, the French government offered a prize of 12,000 francs for a method of preserving food for transport to the French army. It was eventually won by Nicholas Appert, who invented a successful method for canning. In 1820, Jean Bor died. He was the inventor of the sugar granulating process and founder of the sugar industry in Louisiana. In 1869, the removable steel plow blade was invented by James Oliver. In 1887, the first Groundhog Day was observed in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. In 1897, Alfred L. Crowley of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, patented an ice cream scooper. His basic design is still used today. In 1913, Carl Gustav Patrick de Lavel died, a Swedish scientist and inventor. Among his inventions was the centrifugal cream separator and a vacuum milking machine. And in 1996, Ray McIntyre died, a chemical engineer who worked for Dow Chemical Company. He invented styrofoam. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, on the phone to join us to take up the weather forecast. Pete, thanks so much for being with us. Start in South America. How's the weather there?
Okay, Todd. Good to be here. The weather across South America is pretty much the same as it's been most of the season. They had one episode of rain that was significant in the Argentine about 2 weeks ago. They're going dry again. And the question there is, did they get enough moisture in a timely enough way to help to bring the corn crop back? My guess is that they did not. Probably did a little help, but not much. Still got rain coming in and out again in Brazil and southern Brazil. Abundant moisture there right now. And it's probably problematic on the amounts that they're getting a little bit further north, but because it's been so persistently wet there.
And when you look at the forecast, what do you see for them in the next week?
Almost identical forecast. More rain in southern Brazil and into the south central areas. More dry weather in the Argentine.
And turn your attention to Ukraine and Russia, where it's been terribly cold.
Yeah, and that is the story agriculturally. It's exceptionally cold in all of Asia, for that matter, and it's going to be extending westward into Europe this week and probably continue into next week. And the whole ball game there, as far as crops are concerned, on that winter wheat crop in the Ukraine, is it cold enough to do damage? There is some snow cover down, but it's been erratic. The crop got off to a late start before it finally got some moisture to get going. That's usually not a good sign. I don't think the snow is deep enough to protect them from the temperatures, which have been getting down well below 20 degrees Fahrenheit across much of the Ukraine. One thing to keep in mind, by the way, is that the Ukraine, which we always used to think of as being a hard winter wheat area, is now 80% soft winter wheat. And so it's not going to have much impact on the global supplies of hard wheat. But it is a problem which I think may continue for the next week and a half, 2 weeks. They're going to stay very cold.
And then finally, today's February 2nd. It's Groundhog Day.
It is Groundhog Day. And I don't think anybody would have trouble guessing what the groundhog came up with, because I'll give you a little background on that. I don't want to disillusion anybody. But Groundhog Day has essentially been around since the late 19th century. We've had 12 years of Groundhog Day. On 12 of those years, no forecast was made for one reason or another. Of the 100 years of forecasts, 86% of them were going for continuation of winter. Only 14% were going for an extension or a change to a early spring. So there's a strong bias that the groundhog always sees his shadow and that the winter will be extended 6 weeks. Of course, the average lifespan of a groundhog is less than 15 days. So Punxsutawney Phil has been getting special medication, I guess, for 80 years to keep coming back and making additional forecasts there. And the last element is that, yes, you see it on the media in the morning. Some of those so-called live shots were filmed before sunrise to get it on air in time. So So maybe it's been the photographer's fault. The groundhog always sees the shadow and scoots.
Hey, thanks so much. That's Pete Levitt and the end of this edition of the Closing Market Report.